grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that
welcome
you
to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all. Everybody's welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. You notice, I got a little guest in the studio today, and I'm also not in the studio. I am in a, what are we at? The Staybridge Suites.
Yeah, extended stays.
The extended stay. Somebody. Wherever they stick workers, they're going to be somewhere extended a long stay. Time. It's basically a hotel room with no cups. This is what I had to go ask them for cups.
And is it really?
I finally like, conned somebody out of some plastic cups.
I had
cups.
Like eight.
Oh, no. I'm just kidding. I'm in the wrong room. Barry got the headliner room. I got the feature room. Most of y'all already know my good friend, Barry Laminack, stand-up comedian, radio host extraordinaire. You also have Barry on Deck, your own show.
Yeah.
And they do all kind of wonderful things. We were talking last night about some of the charity endeavors you guys have done. And let me turn that computer down so that my editor's not making beeping noises throughout this.
For my own work.
Barry on Deck's done some big good. I didn't even know about all the money y'all raised and everything. Yeah, for. And then y'all went to a no-kill shelter and you ate poison ivy or something so the animals didn't have to. That's phenomenal, bro.
You know, we do what we can.
Yeah, that's a good Christian soldier right there, Bubba. So me and Barry on the road this week. We're working in San Antonio at the fabulous Retama Race Park.
Yes.
Because you know what a horse racing park needs? It's a stand-up comedy show.
Yes.
Makes all the sense in the world.
Yes.
I'm just glad we're not in the middle of the track.
I know. You know what? Everybody, when I first tell them, like,
especially
hey,
when there's only 13 people there. There's 13 people at last night's show. You ever, every once in a while, you just need a little humbling. And that was
comedy is a cruel mistress.
Oh, I'm humbled.
But, yeah. You think you got it all figured out. And then they hit you with a 13-person show. 13, you're like,
I can't remember the last time I did that bad. Even in El Reno, we had 20 people. Even in El Reno, we had 20 people. We had 25 people at the barbecue restaurant that time. But 13 people last night.
Shout out to San Antonio for not fighting traffic.
Yeah. This area of San Antonio we're in. So San Antonio, I'm no city planner. All right. But I've lived in a few. And don't get me wrong, Houston got all, they've been working on 45 since before either one of us was born.
Yeah.
But the thing I will say about Houston is they like to work on one freeway at a time.
Yes.
They don't ever finish it, but then they'll get bored or their ADHD will kick in. They'll be like, let's go work on 610 for a little while. But then they go work on 610 for a little while.
They pick all the stuff up.
Yeah. And they go to a new place.
Yeah.
It's not like San Antonio over the my last 4 or 5 years of coming here. They just continue to dismantle more of the San Antonio. They've got 1604 screwed up.
35.
Now they're tearing 1604 up from like 35 all the way to, I can't remember the other highway out there.
Yeah.
They're going to make it 5 lanes, but they didn't finish doing 35 before they did any of that.
No.
The 410 loop, so everything. I just went 11 miles and it took 46 minutes. 46 minutes. We're the world's oldest Uber driver. I swear to God, if this man wasn't 85 years old, he wasn't a day. And he literally sat on the freeway behind another car that was sitting behind nothing.
Just sitting there?
For a good 8 minutes.
And didn't honk. Didn't go
around. It just waited for them to move. I'm like, bro.
His first Uber car was a Model T.
He drove checkered cabs. My God. I was just like, bro, why aren't you in a hurry? You were running out of time.
Thing you don't have is time. Go.
Like, I got a little time, but you're really on the low spectrum of time that we got left to make a decision about this car in front of us, bro. Like, I don't know if your minutes are weeks, but
It's something. Maybe he's Canadian. He just didn't do the conversion.
It was.
I went out just to get coffee. That was it. Just to get some coffee. And back when I texted you,
yeah, keep talking. I'm gonna turn this air down. It's a little hot in here.
It took 45 minutes to. You know where that QT is? It's about 3 miles from here.
Oh yeah.
It took me 45 minutes to get there, get my stuff, and get back.
Yeah, they were like, "Oh, we got more tickets sold tonight." I'm like, "I don't know if anyone's gonna make it."
Man,
I tell people, like, I made a little video earlier, like, y'all come to San Antonio show, you want to leave about 2 hours ahead of time.
You want to leave last Wednesday.
So that you can spend an hour sitting on 35 looking at the racetrack.
And he's being humble. He said 13 people came. That's not how many tickets were sold. I just need everybody to know that.
That's how many people came, though.
30-something tickets sold. So it's not like he sold 13 tickets. It was much more than that.
How was your... We went out and had a little drink last night at a bar where we did not fit in.
Nope. It
we
was
were way too old
I got
for
called,
that bar.
I got called tight and not tight by some youngster.
But then we also watched him puke in the rocks for a while. And that was hilarious. Yeah,
I can hold my liquor, youngin'.
I got a great deal of joy out of watching that fool stagger around and puke in the
down,
rocks.
Fall down, throw up. I was like, who's not tight now?
I was like, you thought you was a bad dude 30 minutes ago.
He came up, he grabs my shirt, he pops the collar on. He goes, yo, that's tight.
But you're not
and he
tight.
He goes, but you're tight, but you're not. And I was like, what does that even mean? And then 30 minutes later, as we're finishing our drinks, you see him fall down, then he gets up, then he throws up, and he's like, it's not tight, bro.
If you're guessing
tight.
The demographic of that bar, it was probably 22 to 28 young black folks that they were there for quite a large birthday party that was raging on and having a good time.
Yep.
I like hip-hop music, so I was having a good time, but we had to wait 20 minutes to get a drink.
Oh.
And then I just felt so old. I just never felt so old, especially when the 25-year-old comes by wearing a Akeem Olajuwon one jersey. I'm like, you don't even remember that dude,
right?
I barely remember him.
You have no idea. Yeah, that was an experience.
The bartender, it's like a 22-year-old bartender in fishnet tights and wearing a Ramones shirt. And I so bad, I wanted to be that guy. I want to just go up and sing I Want to Be Sedated and see if she recognizes that song.
Who's that? Yeah. Is that Blink 182?
I didn't want to play it on the jukebox because I wasn't trying to get my ass kicked. But I did want to see if she
talk about a record scratch.
A single Ramones song.
They probably didn't even have that on there.
It'd been wild if I had played it on the jukebox and they just start raging out to it. I would then I wouldn't have felt so old.
I've never felt so old as that. Just experiencing that, because it was like when she gave me my drink, the second bartender finally shows up and takes her drink. She goes, here you go, sir. I was like, sir? Sir hurts. I just need young folks to know.
Sir hurts.
When you're talking with people in their 40s and 50s, sir hurts. It's like, I'm not a sir yet. Sirs is for 70 people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 70-year-old men. And
sir
men
is
men
my
and,
dad.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
I
always, exactly.
I always have my editor buddy Adam, every time he calls me, he always says the same thing. He's about 12 years younger than me. And I'll pick up the phone and he'll go, Mr. Longmire. And I'm like, that is not me.
That's my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's this old dude that lives in Longview, Texas.
Yeah.
I am JW or Jerry Wayne. You know, asshole.
Buddy,
you can call me a lot of things. Mr. Longmire is not who I am.
Yeah. Just if you're in your 20s or 30s and you see somebody in their 40s, don't say sir or 50. Just dude, man.
Or dude.
That's
it's
all
good manners, but don't be upset if they start crying.
Yeah.
You know? If you see them walk away wiping their eyes and sniffle or
didn't
whatever,
know any
just
of the
let
songs
them be.
Being played, she said sir, and I was like, I'm old. This is it. I'm old. But at least I'm not falling down and throwing up.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I do not miss
sirs
it.
Don't do that.
I don't remember the last time I honestly had so much to drink that I threw up.
God.
I don't remember the last time that happened. And I'm real thankful about that.
Yeah.
And it ain't because I can necessarily hold more liquor now. It's just I don't do that to myself no more.
Oh, I used to.
Yeah, I've done it.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah. You get older.
The last time
wise.
I did that, I had bad credit. Worst credit.
Yeah. There you go. Worst credit.
Last time I did that, I was in about the 508 category.
Yeah. You're like, I need to just get drunk and fall down and throw up to forget my credit score. Yeah.
So we're going to do the show a little different today. I got my buddy Barry in. I thought we'd have some fun. And I found three interesting topics I want us to talk about. And I wrote a little something to go at the end of it. But one of these topics really surprised me. I was going down some rabbit holes the other night. And there is a rumor I have been spreading for years that is not true. I had no idea. I have been telling people for years that Johnny Cash...
Sorry.
No, that's fair. I mean, I do say that a lot.
Yeah.
I've been telling people for years that Johnny Cash extincted a species of bird because he got drunk while he was camping. This back when he was all messed up on the methamphetamines. And he got drunk and he left a cigarette going and started a forest fire.
That's crazy.
And to be fair, where I got this information was from his biography called Cash. And I read it about three or four times. I was just incensed with Johnny Cash. I wanted to be him. I still wear all black, but I wanted to be Johnny Cash. You know, he's godfather punk. He was just this cool folk hero as I was growing up. But then I learned this horrible thing about him in a book, and I would be like, yeah, as cool as Johnny Cash is, he did extinct the species of bird, but he didn't. It's all a lie. It's all a lie. He did start a huge wildfire. 1965, this is when him and his first wife, Vivian, and her book just come out a couple, about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer than that, but this is with him and his first wife, Vivian. And they was living out in Los Angeles, and this is when Johnny was really getting, this is when he was tearing sinks off the walls. You know what I mean? This is when I heard a story about him, and I'm pretty sure this story is true, but we had a friend back in Kilgore in East Texas, old man, and his dad had owned the only pharmacy in town, the Eckerd's, back in during the hayride, before Cash got famous, moved out to L.A., in the hayride tours day. So it was Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Roy Orbison. Wow. And they were just cutting a rug and living wild in their car and taking as many pills as they could get. And, and the rumor about that goes, Elvis one turned them on with the pills. Elvis was like, you take you some of these pills, you can drive all night and do four shows tomorrow, you'd be feeling good. And Johnny got off into these methamphetamines, and the story goes about this old man owned this pharmacy in Kilgore. Was just while the hayride tour was going on, and they would come through on their way to Gladewater to do shows, they'd stop at that pharmacy about midnight, pull up to the back door, and Johnny Cash would get out of this big old black Cadillac with a big black leather bag, and the old pharmacist would just fill him up. Fill him up. And then he'd throw it in the car and they'd go on and do the shows.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't say for sure that story's true, but it feels true.
Yeah. Wouldn't shock you if it was.
No.
For sure.
So by the time he moves out to LA, he's on that shit. He's in it. He's on the ride. Right. Mm-hmm. And anybody's been, I've never been a big speed guy. I've had
Does
my
that
dalliances.
All count?
Yes.
Oh,
very much so.
I'm on the ride. right now, but
I only had that one experience of Adderall. That was enough for me. But the dalliances, he was in it, right? He's riding hard. Him and his wife ain't getting along on account that he was screwing everything that walked while he was on tour.
That'll do it.
And she took offense to that.
Yeah.
You know, she was kind of uppity. Anyway, I don't even a rock star. No. Johnny wasn't living right. He was partying hard. He was going hard to paint. Well, he had this little camper trailer, right? And he would go camping to get away from her, camping. Mm-hmm. And camping was short for just drinking and doing pills out in the desert and that sort of thing. And so he goes out in like 1965, he goes camping in the Los Padres National Forest. And the story was, he was drunk, left a cigarette going, started fire. That wasn't what happened, though. But there was a huge court. He started this wild. The wildfire started at his camper, burned 508 acres. And apparently this 508 acres was the rare, almost already endangered California condor nesting ground.
And all the luck.
And they took him to court. The federal government, I got the note here, the federal government sued him to the tune $125,000, $172 in damages for the firefighting cost and the habitat damage and the damage to the California condor. Ooh. During the trial, the government attorneys argued that the fire harmed the endangered California condor. They didn't even know how many of them were dead or how many of them was left. Park rangers testified that he killed all these condors and that the fire started because of a cigarette. But then a later investigation found out Johnny didn't help his case. Johnny was standing in court and they're giving him all this grief about how much money they're going to get from him. But Johnny's response was, I don't care about your damn yellow buzzards. Which probably turned the court against him a little bit.
That's the most Johnny Cash thing to say ever.
Yeah, that just sounds like a redneck from Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I don't care about your damn yellow bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dude. That is...
Johnny's testimony didn't hurt. But what I found out since then, just recently digging down a rabbit hole, was it wasn't a cigarette started the fire. It was the wheel bearings on his camper truck. He had this Bonanza camper, and the wheel bearings had overheated and started the fire. Now, he was drunk. He did try to put out the fire, quite clearly unsuccessfully.
To the tune of 508 acres,
unsuccessful. But not a single condor was killed. That was all a bit. None of them were killed. And the backside of the story is the condors are doing way better now because of all the conservation efforts that sprung up as a result of everybody being mad at Johnny Cash and thinking Johnny Cash killed off the condors. Everybody started donating money to these stupid birds they had never seen. And it's wild, though.
These yellow buzzards.
The thing about the firefighters out there, like, we got to save these birds. Yeah. We got to put this fire out.
Dude, the fact that he became the face of conservation for it, not for that cause in particular, is hilarious.
And the government hit him for $125,000, yeah, which was a little bit more money in 1965.
Man, that's a lot of money back then.
You know, I mean, it's a lot of money. If somebody hit me for $125,000 right now, I'd just laugh at them like,
where do you want me to get that?
I don't even have enough pounds of flesh to cover that cost.
Thankfully. That was... what I love though is they assumed it was a cigarette. Like, how did they find out it was the bearings on the camper? Because you would assume it was probably a cigarette where he just flicks it, not thinking twice. I'm a former smoker.
Some arson investigator with the fire department after the trial was like looking at them wheel bearings like, man, I think, and that was a common thing back then.
But the trial said cigarette.
Yeah. Okay. So the park rangers testified that it was cigarettes. Uh-huh. The fire department later came on and said, no, it was caused by these wheel bearings. But you know how it is in the zeitgeist. Once a story's out there, it's out there. You know, especially in the 60s where there was far less media.
Oh, yeah.
And once one media picked up a story, that was a story. The story was Johnny. Johnny, in his book, Johnny went to his grave thinking he extincted this damn yellow buzzard.
Really?
I'm not sure he was upset about it.
Oh, I doubt he cared. I doubt it. Yeah.
He didn't seem remorseful.
No, if he's calling him yellow buzzard, he probably didn't think twice after the trial was over and he cut the check. He was probably done with it all.
It makes me, because they said there was like 50 condors at the time, right?
In
they
the
were
world?
Already endangered at the time. There was 50 of these California condors. But then all the conservation efforts that happened after this, and by the 80s, now that today there's like 560 condors and they're about half
almost
of them
one
are
for
wild.
Every acre.
Yeah.
Almost one for every acre he burned. See? Life's a circle. Kids.
Life's a circle.
You know, when they hit 508, he was like, you're welcome, everybody.
But let's be real. How many oil companies?
Oh.
Have extincted animals that there's never been a news story about.
Never.
It's animals nobody cares. Nobody knew. I can't. Look, If I hadn't read a headline like, oh no, the California condor is extinct, I would. I know me well enough to know that somebody's like, oh, did you know this bird went extinct? I'd be like, I don't, do we eat that one?
Yeah, no, right.
I don't give a shit.
You know? What does that one taste like?
But if I read it in the headline, I'd be like, oh my God, why did Johnny do that?
You know? Oh yeah, it's 100%. And it's easier to get mad at one person who has that bad boy image than it is just be like, well, it was an oil tanker.
He's a target.
Yeah, 100%.
Also, standing up in the courtroom,
saying,
I don't give a damn about your yellow buzzards.
Yeah, no Exxon Mobil executive is going to do that. We're really sorry about all the sea turtles.
You know, seals can kiss my ass, to be honest with you.
Could you imagine an Exxon Mobil executive? Them seals can kiss my ass.
They don't even taste good. Why do y'all care?
What do they do? They do nothing.
I wonder if seal does taste good. I probably shouldn't wonder that. But I eat most mammals, you know?
I don't know. They got a lot of fat on them.
Yeah. Well, you got to slow smoke it.
Yeah, probably.
I put that in my little easy bake oven.
Yeah.
Just 210 for about 12 hours. We'll liquefy that fat. We'll get it done.
Yeah. You think it tastes more like...
Most things out of the ocean taste gamey, though.
I was going to say, you think it's more like a fish taste or a game? Yeah, they eat a lot of fish. I don't know, because like... I don't like calamari.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan.
I don't like my wife.
I used to like it when I was younger. I don't like it now. Really? That kind of grosses me out.
But I've had, and stuff like that. I've had shark, which was just gamey, but it's like.
So we used to do our shark different. So when we caught, we used to fish black tip shark a lot. And when we caught one that's big enough, we would cut it up like fillet style, more or less, and then put it in a Ziploc bag with some buttermilk. And let it sit overnight in the refrigerator. Yeah. And then we throw that on the grill the next day and take all that gaminess out of it. I've heard people using vinegar and other stuff to do it. But I always kind of like shark. There's so many things I haven't got to try that I'd like to. Like, I'd like to try a little bear.
Do they eat bear?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody eats bear. The Eskimos ate bear, didn't they?
Yeah.
Indigenous people probably ate bear.
I
bet there's some place here in the... Y'all let us know. Is there a place to get some good bear? Like, did somebody make a bear? Is the McDonald's in Alaska
save a little Big Mac bear? Bear claw's not the same, though. It's just a donut. But, I think the weirdest thing I've ever eaten was probably like...
I'm going to remember that joke next time I tell somebody he's funny. Anyways.
I think the weirdest thing I'll be telling somebody,
I'm going to go bear claw.
Yeah. Never mind.
Barry's a pro. He's good.
Jordan missed a shot every once in a while. I think the weirdest thing I've ever eaten was like alligator. I've had a squirrel a few times. But that's not that weird. Yeah, depending on where you're from, where I grew up. I was going to say, depending on where you're from, squirrel's pretty common. Yeah, but for somebody like me, a city boy, the squirrel was weird.
Yeah.
I think alligator.
Did you enjoy it?
What, the alligator or the squirrel? No, not really.
Not so much.
No, I had that and frog legs in the same night.
That's a lot to tackle when you're just used to McDonald's. Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot of adventure in one plate.
Yeah, it was not pleasant.
I'm kind of here or there on frog legs. Squirrel, I used to love squirrel dumplings growing up. But I ain't had none in a long time.
Dumplings?
Yeah, my meemaw used to make squirrel dumplings.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty damn good.
Is it?
Took a lot of squirrels.
So, like, my mom makes... I was going to say, that's a busy week.
My papa Longmire, you know, he grew up during the Depression era in Tennessee, and they just pretty much... He used to tell me stories about how his daddy gave him a .22 pistol, long barrel pistol, like a Ruger, and he'd give him one bullet. And he had to go out there and shoot something for it, because bullets were kind of expensive. Yeah. You know, he had to go out there and... So they would eat rabbit and squirrel and all that kind of stuff. So even after him and my meemaw lived in Kilgore and they were in their old age, Pine Ball's favorite thing to do in the world, especially during the fall, would get up and take his little 410 out in the woods behind their house and
just
bring down a couple of flying tree rats. and then he would hang them up at his carport and dress them and skin them, off the crossbars of his carport.
I say that's crazy, but, you know, given how he grew up and what he had to do.
And they didn't have a lot. He was a retired truck driver living on a pension, and she had a little garage sale and a little paper route, but they didn't have a lot of money. So it was, so they used to do that. I had soft shell turtle stew a couple times when I was young. I've had alligator, snapping turtle. I remember this one time, this is, boy, it's going to show y'all my people. My cousin Dwayne, he's a little older than me, he got so excited because he killed this alligator snapping turtle. About, you know, it's probably a good size. It's a big old alligator. They get huge, but this is a good size alligator snapping turtle. He killed it and he drug it up the house, and I couldn't figure out why he was dragging it up the house. And he was the kind of dude that shot a lot of stuff, so I just, you know, it wasn't uncommon for him to shoot the neighbor's dog or something like that.
Damn.
He just like, yeah, just, you know, some people stuff. Just like shooting stuff. He was like shooting stuff. He was a Pentecostal preacher for a little while and also a cop at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And was kind of going back and forth between the two. And I gave him shit about hunting deer out of season one time. He goes, let me tell you something. That's man's law, not God's law. I was like, boy, we are swimming in justification now.
Backstroking in it.
And he dragged his big old alligator snapping turtle up. And my Aunt Barbara Longmire, she was this like 5'5", hot-headed little Cajun Pentecostal woman. Just black-headed, black hair bunned up on top of her head, almost tall as she was. And she was a caterer and a chef. That was her job. Mm. And she come running out that house with a big old knife. She said, baby, there's 7 kinds of meat on that. And she was so excited to get to work on that snapping turtle.
Man.
And I ain't gonna lie, I had a little bit of it. And then some of them kinds of meat tasted different than the kind of meat I'd been exposed to.
I'm thinking, like, what's under the shell? Is it all meat? Yeah, is it like it's like opening up a
I can tell you, I have never in my life since then requested alligator snapping turtle.
No. I'm just like, where is, because all you see is just the little feet and the little head. I'm like, how much meat could there be on a turtle?
Yeah.
I guess there's
a good sized turtle.
Wow.
Yeah, so we did eat some stuff. I never had, I knew people that ate possum. I never had none.
Yeah.
But I've had raccoon meat. I've had
really?
Yeah, I've had a little raccoon. Yeah. One night, I saw some people. This is in South Louisiana. I pulled up this little camp house I rented.
Say less. Anything is on limits there. These are Katrina rats, right?
It used to be the running joke is the reason there ain't no wells in the Gulf of Mexico is because somebody in South Louisiana found a big enough pot. They just cooked them up.
Uh-huh.
But these dudes had a nutria. You know what that is?
Nutria rat. Yeah,
they had a nutria on a spit over a fire, and I was like,
that's, yeah.
I'll take a cold beer. Thank
you. I'm out on that.
I did drink one of their good Coors Lights, but I didn't have any of the nutria.
Yeah.
And maybe I missed out. I'm okay with missing out on that.
Ugh.
God. Anyway, so I feel terrible. For years, I've been telling people Johnny Cash extincted a bird. He didn't know such thing. In fact, you might say as a result of his malfeasance,
he helped.
The bird did better off in the long run. You know, I mean, you can't say, oh, it's a good thing he burned that woods down. That bird would never got saved because probably lots of other shit died.
Oh, yeah.
In 508 100%. Acres. There's probably a lot of animals in 508 acres.
I was going to ask him any people.
You know.
Mm. Never know.
Our next topic, we're going to segue. There we go. Go over here. This one really tripped me out. I didn't know about this dude. I saw a video about him, and it piqued my interest. And a lot of times, I do a lot of, I'm on social media all the time, so a lot of times I'll see a video about something, but I always got to go look it up because just a lot of videos are bullshit.
Yep.
There's so much AI out there. And so I had to go look this one up, and it was a story about this dude named, let me see if I can pull his name up here. I done forgot. I know his last name is McCollum. Darius McCollum. Darius McCollum was a young black kid, in New York City. He's in Queens, born in 65. Also, something happened in 65 while Johnny Cash was burning down.
Burning. Yeah.
While Johnny Cash was saving the condors, Darius McCollum was born in Queens, New York. Darius McCollum had at what the time they labeled as Asperger's. I think they have a different name for it now because they don't like that guy, but I'm not 100% sure. But regardless, he was neurodivergent. And if you can imagine, in the 60s, he didn't have a good time in school. Kids were a little mean to him because he was peculiar. One of his peculiarities was he was absolutely in love with trains, subway trains. Love trains, which is a common thread amongst. I think I have the only neurodivergent kid that doesn't like trains.
Really?
Yeah, my son don't give a shit about trains.
You're like, I got your train. He's like, no thanks.
Nah, it's not his thing. He doesn't care about trains. But logos, he loves logos.
Like, really?
He can tell you every Fox logo throughout the history of time and how they've evolved. He could tell you every Burger King logo and how they've evolved and what years they changed.
Yeah.
His thing is logos. But And he builds logos out of Legos. That's all he does when he's on Minecraft. Yeah. Me and him have a whole world together on Minecraft where we play together. And I'll build stuff and he'll build stuff. And what he builds is replica of all the restaurants. He builds IKEA replicas and logos. And
that's amazing.
And so we have this whole world we've been working in for like 4 or 5 years. It's just this flat world. And it's just full of giant logos and build it and show it. We even got a Showbiz Pizza.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like, we went old school.
That's old school.
We went old school. The dude's obsessed with it. But Darius was in the trains, especially the New York City subway system, from early childhood. And he was having hell in school. Kids were picking on him. He's about 14, 15 years old. Some kid takes a pair of scissors and tries to stab him.
Damn.
And he gets... whatever, you know, they just didn't care as much back then. And the system was easy to be in.
They didn't know as much, but they also weren't as sensitive.
No.
About it either.
And he gets out of school and he stops going to school and he starts hanging out at the subway system. And because he's obsessed with these subway trains, he starts hanging out with all the transit workers.
The MTA folks,
not the transients, but the transit workers. Yeah. And they befriend him. They love this kid. He's so interested in their job. And there's a documentary about this dude called Off the Rails.
I'm going to watch it.
It came out in 2016. And they were joking kind of one part of it. They said these subway guys were like, hey, man, you want to learn how the train works? Thinking, there's no way a 15-year-old is going to remember how a train works. But the thing
especially
about
one that's different,
thing
right?
about it people is, yeah. that are neurodivergent is they don't forget shit. Oh. And so this kid tucked it away in his little encyclopedia. This is how a train works. One day he's 15, 16 years old. One of these transit workers says, hey, man, I got a little side piece. I want to go over here. I want to go meet this gal. And could you cover my shift for a little while? You seem to know how the trains work really good. Could you it's just rush hour. You just got to run the train. And kid's like, hell yeah. Darius takes over the train and operates it. Didn't break a rule. Didn't break any laws outside of he wasn't supposed to be operating the train. Operates the train perfectly.
Yeah.
Does a great job. Gave the announcements correctly. Made all the scheduled stops. Most of the passengers had no idea anything unusual had happened. Except for one Karen or Greg who called 911 and said, hey, there's a 15-year-old running the train I'm on that feels weird. And the law shows up and arrests him. And at 15 years old, they give him a felony lock him up, right? And it's not even he's in a juvenile system for a little bit, but then they just move him over to the adult system. I assume because he's 15 and black in New York in the 60s, they don't care. So. And he goes to prison, gets a felony. So guess what? When you have a felony, you can never be a transit worker. You can never be an MTA employee, which is wild to me because where did they get them?
Yeah.
Because I just assumed it was all felons doing that.
Right. Yeah. It was like, well, there's.
I thought it was like the oil field. Like, hey, we need a couple felons. You know?
They're resourceful.
And I began a cycle because when he got out of jail, first thing he does is go hang out in the subway system. What does he do? He starts hanging around. Over 40 years, he's arrested and sentenced 30 plus times.
Damn.
For operating subway trains without authorization, driving buses from depots, entering restricted transit facilities, posing as an MTA employee, uniform, badge, radio, everything accurate.
Wow.
He found out how to found out how to get a uniform and get in there and figure out when somebody called in sick. And so then he would just show up and cover their shift. Never got paid by the MTA.
That's amazing.
Just showed up and did an excellent job for free and got arrested for
it.
And
got arrested for it.
They sent this dude to Riker, a guy with Asperger's in Riker's prison. He got married at some point. He never hurt anyone. He never damaged any equipment. He never tried to profit. He never resisted arrest.
Rikers Island is crazy. That's just...
And he got sent to Rikers.
That's crazy.
He simply wanted to participate in the system he loved. He wanted to be a part of the train system. He got married at some point in between one of his jail stays. He marries this old gal, and she decides he's cheating on her because she can't find him at night. He's sneaking out of the house at night. So she hires a private investigator. A private investigator goes to the subway, but he's like, no, he's just hanging out down here with trains. And there's like a thing in the divorce proceedings where she's like, I felt like he loved something other than me. And he's like, yeah, I love trains more than you.
Yeah.
I thought I was very clear about that. I love you, but I love trains more. You know?
How did you not get that?
Each time he was released.
I went to jail 40 times for trains. I wouldn't go to jail once for you. That's love. That's real love.
Man, the messed up thing that I read that really shook me was that he knew the New York City subway system better than anybody. He knew it so well.
Yeah.
That after 9/11 happened, Homeland Security, he was in prison in Rikers at the time, Homeland Security goes and pulls him out of prison so that he can teach them how to protect the subway system from terrorist attacks.
What?
And he does, willingly. He's eager to help. And then they get done, they throw him back in Rikers.
Oh, God. I hate us. I hate us so much for stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Well, they treat him like a repeat offender, not somebody with a disability. He asked repeatedly to be given a job in the transit system, supervised structured work, any legal way to be part of it. The MTA refused every time. They said it was because of liability. He was sent to Rikers and state prisons, places that only worsened his mental health and sense of meaning. His love was pathologized. His obsession was punished. He just wanted to be a part of this thing he loved. What if the thing you love, you were talking about this last night, what if the thing you love most in the world became illegal to you?
That was his quote. He said that.
Oh, okay.
That was his quote.
I didn't see that. That's awesome.
They said, I guess it was in an interview he did, he said, imagine the thing you love the most is also illegal or something like that. And it's just like, that's... Yeah, I mean, what if, and I told you, what if comedy was illegal? What if podcasting was illegal? You like, and look, there are places in the world where both, like, you know, communist countries or places like where you can't do, like, you can't talk freely.
Yeah, yeah.
And imagine that. Like, you went and did a comedy show.
Yeah,
and
do you love something enough to keep doing it?
And put you in prison with murderers and rapists and all the awful...
It's the Lenny Bruce thing. Like, would you just keep doing it if you kept getting arrested for doing something people didn't like?
You know what? I love comedy, but I don't know if I would do 40 different arrests.
I don't know how many times I would go to prison about comedy. Yeah. I think I would just...
be like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to project management and IT. That's a little safer.
I would just go back to construction and tell jokes on the job site.
Yeah. I mean? Exactly.
Like, well, my audience is smaller.
Yeah.
But they're a better audience, and I don't go to prison anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think is it still legal if you're like hammering a nail when you tell a joke, or is it only if you're on stage with a microphone? I have a lot of questions about comedy being illegal. Like, is it an illegal laugh?
Is it?
Does the audience get in trouble too? Like, what if laughing was illegal? Would you still do comedy?
Oh, that's funny.
Out there catching people felonies.
It's like a drug dealer now. You're dispensing the drug.
Yeah, I'm just supplying the people what they want. They're gonna get it somehow.
They're gonna get it from me.
They're gonna make that
else.
Justification. That's the people with the guns and everything. If you got a lot of guns, people gonna make them.
Yeah,
people still gonna get them. If you got a lot of laughs,
people
gonna
kill
them.
People. Bullets do what?
People still gonna get them.
If
you outlaw anything like that, like there's always gonna be somebody to supply it. That's a funny idea. This is a crazy story. I mean, it's kind of funny on the surface, but it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know? Then they committed him to a mental hospital.
So they got him out of prison?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think he's still in a mental hospital now.
Well, I think if you had your choice.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not. I
maybe,
mean, it's six and one
depends
and
what
half
they're
dozen
doing
the other,
in the
right?
mental
yeah.
hospital, you know.
But damn,
I know they don't do a lot of shock therapy anymore.
Right? You just wonder, you know. I mean, just to be able to get away from, you know, some of the criminals that you would be around. When what are you in for? I like trains. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I have a passion for.
I like doing this one job really, really good, and not hurting anybody mm-hmm. when I do it mm-hmm. and making sure people are safe and get to their destination on time. That's what I like.
I'm fascinated.
I like order.
Yeah.
I like order. Structures. I like when the subway system works correctly.
Yeah.
I just want that to happen, you know? Like, ah, we got to lock you up, bro.
I wonder.
They estimate, they say stole. It's not like he took them home, but they estimate right. he stole 5,000 trains in his career.
Damn.
Let me ask you, the thing that bugs me is that's 5,000 times this dude showed up for work and didn't get paid. Hey, tell you something.
Right?
Ugh. I almost didn't come do this show because I didn't get paid for the last
time.
It just takes me one time. You ain't getting paid. Weird. Ah, shit. Guess I'm dragging up today.
Boy, I got stories for days about my money. Like,
I worked at oil field. I have drug up over way simpler shit than not getting paid.
I told you this story. I did a gig in Beaumont. It was a corporate gig. I think I was like, well, we're going to send you a check. I said, buddy, I'm not leaving here without my money.
He was like, what?
I was like, yeah, man. I made him go. He sent somebody to with his ATM card. to go get some money out of his bank. He took money out of the tip jar. I was like, you just settle that with them later. I'm not leaving.
Yeah. I got to go home.
Shit, that, no. But I imagine this happening today. Like, do you think he would be treated different? Do you think knowing what we know now about Asperger's or whatever you said they're,
yes,
they're calling
I do.
It now?
I do
you
think
that it would be, he would be villainized and criminalized?
Look, there's still stories of neurodivergent people being treated poorly, being shot by police,
for sure.
Stuff like that, because they don't understand. But I do think, I believe this just because of stuff I've read, is that a lot of police departments across the country have spent some time training their officers to understand neurodivergency and people with autism better, because they're trying to make, those situations are expensive. They get sued, it's mm-hmm. not good for the city. So they're trying to teach them, and they're actually starting, a lot of cities are starting to use like social workers and more in those mental health professionals to help with those type of situations.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in downtown San Antonio, and you know, broad daylight, it's not a big thing to drive around and see 8 or 9 people walking up and down the street talking to themselves, and mm-hmm. you can clearly tell that they're unhoused and there's mm-hmm. something going on that's not, some synapses aren't firing and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's a remarkable, you don't want to be, I mean, it's a tricky, there's no black and white problems, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-mm.
There's, you don't want these people to be a danger to the public.
Right.
Which could be a scenario.
Right.
Schizophrenia can be violent. Not as often as people think, but it can be.
Right.
People addicted to substances can be violent. People with mental issues can be violent. So there is, you have to go, okay, we got to protect the public.
Right.
Which is a tricky situation to be in, because you also don't want to be heartless. These are human beings.
Yeah.
That something horrible is happening to them. And, you know, okay, you could say in the drug situation, well, they made their choices, whatever. That's fine.
If you can say
that. Yeah, if you can say that, then good for you. But people with mental health issues didn't make any choices. This shit just happens to them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, but at some point, you do have to draw a line. You do have to draw a line where it's like, oh, there's a public safety problem. It's not a, look, it's a problem I'm glad nobody's asked me how to solve. You know what I mean? Because it's murky.
Yeah.
It's murky as hell.
I feel like, and I'm kind of surprised that he's still in an institution, because you would think with what we know now and what nobody has stepped up and stepped in and said, look, this guy isn't crazy. He's not insane. He's not, you know, he's mentally unstable. He is just obsessed in a way that someone with Asperger's would be obsessed. And it's, you know, I feel like today, if this were to happen, especially with social media now,
I don't think they would give a 15-year-old a felony.
No, first of all, I don't think so either.
Because they screwed him right there. That put him in the system for the rest of his life.
I would love to think that humanity would win in that they would say, all right, when you become of age, we'll give you a job doing something that's supervised and, you know, like, just allow him to do this passion and get paid for it that he's good at.
Don't prisons have trains? Isn't there a train somewhere he can drive?
I don't know. You would think,
there's
right?
There's not a train anywhere he can. If I hit my Diamond Gym money, I'm going to buy a train.
Are you? And let him ride. And let him be the
I'm
going to
see if I can get Darius out of a mental health facility. I'm just going to let him drive my train. You know what I mean?
That's just sad.
I'll give him a bunch of stops. That'll just be my show. Like, yeah. We're going here, here, and here.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Buy a big piece of property, well, build a little train track.
That was the other thing, though, is he did take buses, which was... Yeah, yeah. It was like, well, all right. Well,
now you're branching out, bro.
Yeah, like, listen, let's not buckshot this. You're scattered.
Yeah. I don't want him hanging out at the airport.
No.
Because right now, he could probably steal a plane pretty easy, you know?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Captain McCollum. Nope! Let me off! Nope!
I just remembered.
Nope!
I just remembered I'm sick. I need off this plane. It's wild. It kind of broke my heart reading that story. And
very
I was
sad.
Wildly fascinated with it. And I wanted to talk about it here because I feel like more people should know about it. Some of y'all are really smart. You probably already know about this dude, but
some of y'all are just trippy. No, I'm just kidding.
Some of you have never.
Probably my fans watching. That's who I'm talking to.
Yeah, it's just wild, man. Yeah, it's wild. Sad. Like, I consider myself a passionate human about a few things, but I don't know if I got that kind of passion.
Yeah, I ain't got.
I think first time somebody put me in Rikers, I'd be like, "Well, shit, man."
That's the end of that.
I guess I'm gonna take up origami next.
But you don't have Asperger's, or you know, you're not neurodivergent, and so that you have that ability to rationalize that. That's what punishments like that are for. Mm-hmm. Is it's like you did something bad. This is the punishment to deter you from doing it again. But someone that's neurodivergent doesn't understand that. They fixate on the passion.
This is just the thing I got to get through so I can go do what I want to do.
The consequences are like, whatever, but I just want to do this. And that's where society failed him, is not understanding that, you know?
Yeah, I just feel like it might could have been handled differently. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not claiming to have all the answers. And it's easy to look back and go, well, y'all really screwed the pooch here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's easy to look back at him and make judgments about everybody involved with it. But I tell you, the person I would like to see interviewed is that dickhead that let him drive the train the first time while he went off to go do whatever.
Right.
Like, how do you feel, bro?
Yeah, you started.
You've been awful quiet since that first arrest.
Yeah, I wonder if when you were saying that, I was like, I wonder if that dude got in trouble. Did he get fired?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Surely he got fired at least.
Yeah, I bet he can't ever be an MTA employee again either.
Hell no, better not at least in New York.
I mean, y'all could have let the kid take tickets or something.
Something.
Like,
he could have been.
It's the thing where Homeland Security uses him.
Oh. That's kind of disgusting.
That couldn't just be his job?
Yeah.
Y'all could have just kept him on staff. He wasn't even asking for money.
Well, what's crazy and
he
sad.
He wasn't even asking for money.
It's
you
crazy
could just
and
put
sad.
Him up in housing and be like, this is our director of subway trains.
Do you know how many people would have used that to get out? I'll help you. But
yeah.
But again, that's his brain doesn't function like that. They were like, you want to help us with some trains?
They're
like, he's like, yes.
They're like,
trains.
We think you know more about the subway. I do. Let's go.
Let's do it. And you know, had he had good lawyer or good...
No, we're worried about terrorists blowing up the trains. We can't have that. Here,
is,
I will show you.
What about his family? Like, no one in his family? I don't know. Maybe they did. And
I couldn't
just,
find much about
but
that.
It's just like, nobody was like, oh, hey, I'm his lawyer. You want him to help you? Sure, but you have to let him out. And maybe that's why he went to the mental institution instead, is maybe they negotiated that. Look, if you help us, we'll get you out of here and somewhere where it's a better quality
but
of life.
But if you're already struggling... With clearly, he wasn't just neurodivergent. He was struggling with some mental health issues.
Yeah.
If you're already struggling with that, and then I can't imagine prison's helpful for mental health issues.
Oh God, no.
I can't imagine being around a bunch of psychopaths and derelicts and miscreants.
Trying to just get a good night's sleep and everybody just screaming and hollering all night.
Yeah.
I can't, dude. The guy above me is stomping, and I'm losing my shit. It's just like, I couldn't even imagine 1,000 guys around you screaming and hollering. And,
All right. Well, our third story is a gem. I got so tickled about this, I really want to write a movie about it because it shocked me. That me and Rachel were having a conversation, and we were trying, because I was painting my screen porch. And I was using a paint roller to paint the porch. And I said, you know, the first guy that showed up on the job site with a paint roller, everybody's like, what the shit is that? Let me get one of them. You know what I mean? That thing's bad as hell. Look at my paint he just put up that wall.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And I just assumed, like most things, the paint roller was probably invented in the 1600s by the Sumerians or whoever the shit was inventing stuff back then. Somebody wrapped a cat around a thing and dipped it in paint and painted some chapel or something, you know? And I was surprised to learn that paint rollers were only invented in the 40s during World War II because there was a shortage of paintbrushes. There was a shortage of a lot of things during World War II. But one of the things that was going on during that period of time was there was a, most of the paintbrushes in the world were made with Chinese boar bristles. This is before they had all the synthetics, the nylons and all that. So everybody depended on these Chinese boar pig bristles. And they bought them from China.
Now, was it the hair or the whiskers?
No, it was the bristles. So they would buy them from the Chinese. Right, Chinese were exporting this. If you wanted Chinese pig bristles, you had, I don't know why the Chinese boar pig bristles were better than the Russian boar pig bristles.
Yeah,
I can't tell you that. I didn't read that much into it. But then I found about this Cold War operation called Operation Pig Bristle.
Which just sounds like...
Yeah.
It just sounds like two dudes in a truck in the middle of...
It sounds like something my people did.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like two dudes in a truck in the middle of Kentucky.
Which we're not far off. It's the Australians.
Pretty close.
We're talking about Australians here.
Yeah.
See, in the late stages of World War II, there was a housing boom in Australia. This huge construction boom going on. But it was being hindered by a lack of paintbrushes.
You would never thought that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what y'all couldn't wipe on stain.
Yeah.
That takes a rag.
Yeah, we'll paint it later.
Just nobody had invented the sprayer yet. I ain't seen anybody paint a house with a paintbrush in 10 years.
But, or we'll just do it later when the war's over.
Yeah, we'll paint them.
Build the houses and we'll paint them. Yeah, okay.
So this was holding up the building industry. It was a national problem in Australia. So the Australian Royal Air Force, at the time, China is going through their own civil war. And all exports out of China are screwed up and everything's jacked up because of that. And the communists are winning and it's not going great, right? And some of these Chinese diplomats that still know some of the Royal Australian Air Force people say, hey, we happen to know where there's 25 tons of Chinese boar pig bristles.
That's a lot of
pig bristles. That's a lot of pig, 25 tons of hair. Yeah. 25 tons of hair.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, if you added up all that's Dolly Parton's wigs and my beard, it might not be 25 tons of hair. And companies were trying to invent nylon, and some of that was happening in the United States. They were experimenting with nylon. DuPont was experimenting with synthetic fibers. The United States took a different approach.
Yeah.
The Canadians invented paint rollers. And then a guy in the U.S., because the Canadians forgot to patent it, goes, hey, I just invented this thing called a paint roller. And paint rollers were all the rage in the U.S. already.
Typical American.
But the Australians go, hey, we're coming to get them pig bristles. And there was a whole operation.
That's crazy.
Where these four to five heroes from the Royal Australian Air Force fly a Dakota aircraft into China, into communist China, load up 25 tons of pig bristles, fly it into Shanghai, which was at the time was on the free side of things, and then smuggle it back into Australia. And I just...
That's wild.
For one, the idea... Well, there was no losses. They survived, right? So the idea that somewhere in Australia, there was this old-timer veteran, and his big war story was, I stole 25 tons of hair from them kind of godless communists. Those red devils didn't even catch me. Papa, why was you stealing boar bristles? I don't know. Do y'all call them Papa in Australia? Whatever they got. Papa probably means some kind of killer animal in Australia.
Right.
But
yeah.
Granddaddy. Yeah. Oh, why did you steal all the
Grandpapa.
Why are you stealing pig hair? I picture...
And you wouldn't have this house if it weren't for me. Nobody would.
I was thinking about this. I was like, there's some boomer age. Once again, I don't know if Australia had baby boomers because that was kind of a North American thing. And I bet boomer means something completely different. That's like a guy that hangs out down in the swamp or something.
Right.
Or boomer's probably a train. in Australia or something.
It's just the same boomer. Let me borrow you a boomer.
But some boomer age Australian at some point trying to get his Gen X age son's attention, like, you know what your granddaddy sacrificed? You like living in houses? You better go thank your granddaddy. If it hadn't been for him, we would have run out. We were about to run plumb out of house. I don't know why my Australian sounds like an Appalachian. This is just the voice I have.
Say plumb out. That's okay. Any impression I do ends up Australian, which is very ironic.
We was running plumb out of houses, all the way to Perth. Your granddaddy saved us. You better go. So yeah, you're gonna pick him up from the nursing home, you son of a, you ungrateful bastard. It also the talk before, because you always see that in a war movie. It's like, man, you're flying into dangerous territory. You're going up against these godless communists, and if you're captured, we'll have to deny any knowledge of your existence.
We can't come get you.
You may very well end up in a communist prison
for life.
But your nation needs these paintbrushes. This is a matter of national security.
That's what's crazy, is it's like, hold up, wait, what are we going to get? And they're like, hair.
We're not blowing something up?
Pig hair? We're risking life and capture for pig hair. It's bigger than that. No, it sounds pretty cut and dry. It sounds like we're going to get 25 tons of pig hair.
So we can
I just bomb somebody? Can I switch teams and bomb? I just want a new platoon or whatever. This is bullshit.
Has nobody tried finger painting?
Can we just paint this shit later? Because I got plans.
Give me one of them cotton garden gloves. I'll dip it in the paint and just smear it on the house.
Use a rag. Yeah, thank you. We can come up with all kinds of ideas. Anybody just want to do stucco? Can we just do...
But it also kind of, it's like a wild thing that reveals how fragile infrastructure is. One thing can get in the way of infrastructure. One little thing can shut everything down. But my book is being delayed right now because of because most of the books are printed in India and there's stuff going on because of the tariffs and it's things screwed up. And it, like, one little thing can get in the way of everything, especially in a global economy. One little problem can start everything. That's just wild to me. But I do
think your idea of making this a movie is really smart.
Oh, dude, I think it's freaking hilarious.
You got to write this. This is...
It's one part war movie, one part dude, where's my car?
Yes. You know? I was going to say, when you wrote it, would it be serious?
Oh, no,
would it be a comedy?
Yeah, no, man. I'm calling the Coen brothers.
Because you can do both. Like, you're great at comedy, obviously.
It would be a serious
but
comedy.
But you're great at, being serious and, in sermons and all the things.
I want
that
Shia LaBeouf.
I mean, I'm seeing, like...
I want Shia LaBeouf and John Bernthal and somebody Australian. Give me that breakdancer chick.
I'm seeing
Give me that
secret.
Australian breakdancer chick. She'll be on the flight.
She's on there.
That's the only famous Australian I know right now. My other favorite one died.
Yeah. I could see this as like
get
a top
his
secret.
Kid. We'll let him be one
Have
of the
seen
Air
Top
Force
Secret?
People. Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I could see this as that, right?
Yes.
Operation Pig Bristle.
Operation Pig. They really called it that too.
That's crazy.
That's not a good secret operation name.
Yeah, come up with something else.
I mean, you could be like Operation Paintbrush, and people be like, "Wonder what they're doing."
Wonder
you know what
that's
I mean?
About, it, man. Yeah, this is gonna be. I can't wait to read your script.
That Operation Pig Bristle tells you what they thought about the Chinese. They ain't gonna know what the hell we're talking about.
they're dumb.
Pretty sure in their language is treehouse, cat. They ain't gonna know what we're coming to get,
Squiggly line over another squiggly line divided by a line. Yeah, cat. That's funny.
But it's also heroic. Like, you guys smuggled some shit out of China during like one of the craziest periods of the history, right? Like, you were going up against some real bad dudes,
That's wild. That's wild.
I wonder if they even told them. They were just like, we need you to fly in China. Why? I can't tell you.
Don't look in the briefcase.
It's classified.
Yeah, don't look in the briefcase. Just go and get it and bring it back.
Hey, we noticed on the way back.
If you told them, they'd be like, hell no, I'm not going. I quit. Take all my ribbons and my shit. I quit.
We noticed on the way back the plane smells weird now. What's it? Because 25 tons of pig bristles can't smell good.
One ton.
And there are tons in Australian, so they're spelled T-O-N-N-E-S, which I don't know if that's a bigger ton than our ton.
Really?
Or if it's the same ton.
Oh, now I got to look that up. Yeah. I didn't even think about the smell on the plane.
Whew. God, yeah. Well, that smelled like a can of smashed ass. That was horrible. Horrible.
And then you get it back and you're like, all right, now what? They're like, well.
I also feel bad for the guys who finally got a vacation from making paintbrushes. Right? And then these assholes show up. They're like, man, bro, I was going to take my kids down to the coast.
We were going to
hang out, you know.
Australian Disney.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Everything in Australian Disney wants to kill you too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild, dude. The other thing is, like, if you're planning that mission, you've got to be, how do you not, me, I couldn't be in the room with all the people planning this and not just laugh every time they're like, and then you're going to take the pig hair. What? Yes.
Get the pig hair.
It seems silly, but
we need it.
That's crazy. Their entire
national
economy.
Security, son. All right, let's wrap it up right there, guys. Appreciate you hanging out for nonsense. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week, back in the wrecking yard. Is there anything else on that? We'll move on. Let's do some testimonials. Oh, do you got anything you want to plug before we get out of here? You got anything coming up?
No, not really. Nothing big. Just,
sounds like it's going well.
Yeah. Well,
Boy, this comedy thing is killing it.
It is,
We will be in Mississippi together. We're going to be in Macomb, Mississippi, November 15th. We're doing one show, big car show during the day. I'll be out there at the car show. I'm excited to go to Mississippi because one of my heroes, Jerry Clower, who's the granddaddy of Southern storytelling, and a great deal of influence on my entire personality and my being growing up. Jerry Clower is buried right there in Liberty, Mississippi. I looked it up, and it looks like it's spelled Am I Right, Mississippi, which made me laugh a little bit. The Am I Right Cemetery. So anyway, it's about 10 miles from the theater, so I'm gonna make the pilgrimage pay some respect to the granddaddy of all Southern legacy and Southern storytelling. You gotta go out there and see old Jerry and make sure you're right.
If you don't know who that is, you gotta look him up.
Jerry Clower. If you're watching this, you don't know who Jerry Clower is. I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Let's do some testimonials. These are some comments from I always go into my dusty. There's testimonials, if you will. But I can't do too much of that because then I get stuck in dusty roads. I was watching Cody Rhodes do an interview, and I never realized he kind of has the lisp.
He fights it,
but if you watch his mouth when he talks, he kind of has the lisp. Really great impression of his father. Into it really well.
Why fight it? It's a beautiful thing.
I was like, bro, if you did that lisp, everybody would love you even more.
God.
Everybody already loves you, Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
They would love you even more.
I'll fight that.
You're the son of the dream, baby.
Baby.
Yeah. Woo. Anyway, let's do some testimonials, if you will. See, I fall into it. I love Dusty. This is our comments from last week. Our old buddy at Getting Greasy Garage 2435. When you talk about the title of this week's podcast, as I talked about some addiction pills, and the title was called "The Devil Ain't a Who." When you talk about the title of this week's podcast, it really hit me. Almost made me feel like you're pointing your finger at me directly. Recovering alcoholic of 6 years is taking high-powered drugs from my recent surgery and how dangerous that can be. I'm being very cautious about it, so thank you for the upfront reminder. That's why I love you and appreciate you too, JW. Our buddy Get Greasy is a day one-er, and if you guys haven't been following along, and I meant to talk about it a while back, he's had a number of spine surgeries now at this point. He had some stuff go wrong for him earlier on in the year, and it got worse before they figured out to do some surgery on him. I have talked to him a little bit. He is, I think he's on the upside of this thing, but any sort of positive energy, especially day oneers can put out for a fellow day oneer that's really going through something. And good for you, man, if you're struggling with alcohol and you beat it, I don't think, utilizing pain medicine in the way that it's necessary is going to be a problem for you. It sounds like you're already in front of it. And I'm really happy to hear you're doing better, buddy. I am a person who's never really struggled with alcohol, but I struggled with those pills got a hold of me and took me to task. I had dalliances with cocaine and stuff when I was younger, but I never felt like I was addicted to it. Mm-hmm. Every time I quit, all three times,
It was very easy though. Every time I go, like, okay, it was very easy. I just delete a couple numbers out of my phone and stopped going to a few bars, and it was easy to quit. It wasn't like cigarettes where they're everywhere.
Oh, man.
You know, but I think the thing with the pain pills that got me the worst was because originally it was my doctor giving them to me, and I was like, well, I need this. The doctor's giving them to me, and this isn't like I'm doing drugs, and I wasn't doing them recreational. And I think that's where they get people. I've just, in the time since I released that little talk about it, I've had so many people reach out to me and tell me their stories. And it's just, there's just so many stories of people just medical procedure, a dental procedure, got in a car wreck. You know, it's just, it's, and a lot of it's back stuff because back pain's the worst, you know, when you're jacked up. Anyways, getting greasy. you know, as much as I'm rooting for everybody, you know I'm rooting for you, baby boy. I hate that you've been dealing with all this stuff, but I like hearing you're on the upside of it. And please, once again, pass along my thanks to your son who reached out to me while you were recovering from surgery to let me know how you were doing, because it really put my mind at ease, and I really appreciated that. let's see. At our old buddy, at Christian Mental Ward. I'm going to see him today. This will air Sunday. I will have already been at the Lemons race. I'm going down for 24 hours Lemon, what's left of it, like the last 4 hours of it. Sunday, once we get back to town, I'm going to run down to Angleton and hang out with my buddies at the racetrack and make fun of some cars and see my good buddy Christian Mental Ward, who introduced me to Lemons Racer. He's also one of the hosts of the Everyone Racers podcast, who was my main sponsor my first season of The Wrecking Yard and even into the second season. They're a wonderful bunch of people. I love their podcast. You should check it out. At Christian Mental Ward says, I also would have sworn termites don't eat cedar as well. Bro, I would have bet cash money on that. You know, I would have I would have backed that up to the gates of hell. Like, you ain't got to worry about no termites. You got no cedar. But they damn sure ate all my good cedar. And so I don't know if I got mutant Houston termites or what are these special termites. I was told all my life that cedar's got these terpenoids in it. These little oils, and I know it rejects ticks. That's why they make dog beds and cat beds out of it and stuff like that.
A lot of different bugs, right? Moths.
But I would have sworn that they wouldn't let, that they'd run off termites. Apparently nothing except latex paint keeps termites. Like, if you paint something really well, they won't get into it.
Well, you know what you need to do that? Pig bristles.
Yeah, like pig bristles. See, that's what happened. The Australians got in the way of my cedar, and now my cedar's ruined. It's the Australians' fault. I'm 100% sure of it. There hadn't been a shortage.
Yep.
Boy, I felt like a diesel truck trying to start there for a minute. Hadn't been a shortage of pig bristles. Yeah.
That's funny.
Let's move on. At Camp Cat 6089, I was hit head-on by a drunk driver and got messed up for a bit. The doctors only wanted to give me pills. I saw what they did to my family members. It finished off my brother-in-law and nearly my brother. Thank goodness the info was out when I got hurt, so I was lucky to dodge that demon. I have so much respect for people that have the strength to fight and win. A chiropractor saved my life. Believe in them or not, I do. Man, I'm so glad you didn't get caught up in that mess. And I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions about chiropractic, and there's a lot of controversy about it. But I have used them off and on over the years for a number of things that they've helped me with. Now, I don't go to a chiropractor when, you know, I think I got a brain tumor or something like that. But, man, this hip, I've been going to chiropractor, been helping me out quite a bit and giving me a lot of relief from it. And so there's stuff I think. But I'm also a person that believes in yoga, and I believe in aligning your muscles and stretching and stuff like that helps you too. I just recently started doing some Tai Chi.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in the mornings, and that Tai Chi is making me feel real good, Bubba. It's supposed to be real good for your mobility. I look ridiculous doing it, but boy, I get out there in the backyard and start kung fu fighting. It feels good, man. It also kind of makes you feel like you might can do some karate. Like, not like real good karate, but like Steven Seagal karate.
Yeah, that fake
where you just like grab a guy and he goes down. Like, that's what the Tai Chi makes me feel like, that maybe I could just put Barry on the ground, like, you know.
Man, I had a pinched nerve in my C6, C7 in my vertebrae, and I went to one of the best doctors around, orthopedic doctors up there in the Woodlands, and he sent me to this guy who was a physical therapist and a chiropractor. He did both.
There's a view of my doctor.
And we would go in, and the first thing he would do would, he would, you know, do a bunch of chiropractic stuff with me and then have me do some physical therapy exercises. And I had lost 98% of the strength in my tricep because of the pinched nerve. Like, I couldn't turn my steering wheel. That's how I knew.
That's how those things work. That's how I knew.
I went one day to turn my car, and I was like, the steering wheel was heavy.
That's what happened to Greasy Grot. He had spine damage, and his hand stopped where he was like, I can't remember all of it, but I know he was like having hand control.
Couldn't turn the steering wheel. Went in and
I tell you, nerve gets in the way of masturbation, I'm gonna have an issue.
Boy,
get me that chiropractor. I'm gonna need you to start on my neck and work your way down. Never mind.
My grip is messed up, Doc. Yeah,
you can either provide your grip or fix my grip.
Your choice. I believe in them, man. My wife is a nurse.
Part of my positive mental health.
Yeah, you know? Right. That release. Yeah. That's funny.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. I tell you guys, I've been considering something lately, and it sort of tied all those stories together. We live in a culture that keeps telling us that meaning arrives with spectacle, that you'll know your life mattered because there was an applause or a headline, or someone stood up and said your name in a room. But the older I get, the more I realize that's a very childlike understanding of significance. Most of the world is held together by people whose names you'll never know, whose actions you were never meant to notice. An Australian flight crew risked diplomatic crisis over a cargo hold of pig bristles so a nation can keep building homes. A man in Queens studies the subway system until it becomes the language of his heart. And all he ever wanted was to belong to the rhythm of the city he felt born into. Johnny Cash gets drunk in a national forest and without intention or malice changes the trajectory of an entire species because everything in this world, whether we like it or not, is connected to everything else. And it's not just personal stories either. History itself is shaped by these quiet hinges. I was looking for an example and I read about a really crazy one. World War I, the war that broke empires, rearranged borders, and set the entire stage for the century that followed, did not begin because kings made speeches or generals drew plans. It didn't start because of anything like that. It began because a chauffeur in Sarajevo took a wrong turn. One wrong turn, one stalled car, one moment of confusion in city traffic, and the world caught fire. The Archduke of Ferdinand was assassinated and the Duchess assassinated. If there's a lesson there, it isn't heroic, it's humble. Small things are not small things. The hinge of history is almost always a quiet joint someone else thought was trivial. The day keeps its shape because of the man who shows up when it's inconvenient. The woman who keeps one particular promise. The friend who answers the phone, even though they're tired and don't have the right words. Civilization is not held together by greatness. It's held together by care. By the smallest acts of steadiness. By mercies so ordinary, we forget they are mercies at all. Purpose ain't a spotlight. Purpose is a posture. It's how you move through the world when nobody's watching. It's how you tend the parts of your life that look unimportant but are actually holding the roof up. So take care. Take care with your words. Take care with your time. Take care with the people who cross your path for only a moment. Because the quiet things are the load-bearing things. The sacred is rarely loud. The sacred is the mundane. It arrives softly and it leaves the same way unless someone's paying attention. I'm rooting for you guys. I tell you that every week. I'll tell you that till you believe it yourself. Pay attention to what's going on in the world around you. Pay attention to the ways that you can make the mundane a little better. Because when you get to the end of your life, I don't think you're going to be thinking about the big moments. I think when I'm at the end of my life, I'm going to think about sitting on the porch with Rachel. I'm going to think about the time my kid was playing soccer and instead ended up catching butterflies. I'm not going to think about the big moments. I'm not going to think about birthdays and weddings and anniversaries. The sacred isn't the mundane. I'm JW, and I love you.
Trail Road.